Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Utah, played defensive tackle for 15 years, never missed a game, and was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1982. He then became an actor on Little House on the Prairie, Father Murphy, and Aaron's Way. He also was an NFL broadcaster for 15 years, during which he broadcast 5 Super Bowls. He's been the national spokesman for FTD Flores since 1983, and a spokesman for Children's Miracle Network. His name, Merlin Olson. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Merlin Olson, who's affectionately known as the Gentle Giant. Merlin, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Well, thank you, Jack. Pleasure to talk to you.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your parents?
I grew up in Logan, Utah, a small town in the northern part of the state. And I'm one of 9 children. My father and mother were both from rather humble backgrounds, farming backgrounds. My mom was born and raised in Star Valley, Wyoming. And my father came out of one of the very dry and agriculturally difficult areas of Utah called San Pete County. They met at Utah State University and were married, and Mom was a teacher early in her life. My father had graduated and became a soil scientist for the Bureau of Reclamation, and his first challenge was to go out and work in what was left of the blighted areas after the Great Depression and the terrible droughts that had attacked the Southwest. That it was really a disastrous situation in our farm economies down through Colorado and New Mexico and so forth. And my dad was working there. I was the second born in our family. I have an older sister. And my mom had come back to Logan, Utah, where her parents lived, to for the birth of her second child, which was me. And very shortly after that, after a few years in Colorado, my father got a chance to come back to Logan with the Bureau of Reclamation. And that's really where I went all through school and had a chance to matriculate. And it was a comfortable place to be raised. Our home was certainly a humble one, but blessed with a great deal of love and lots of challenges in the early going. But a place that you could feel very comfortable, and you always knew that if you wanted to bring somebody else home for a meal, or if you wanted to bring somebody home with you, you were welcome. There was always room, and it was hard to keep count when you had that many kids. So.
Well, not just that many kids, 4 boys, 5 girls, but you and 2 of your brothers played in the NFL.
That's true, Jack, and that's rather an unusual accomplishment. There were 3 All-American football players in our family. My brother Phil, who's about 8 years younger than myself, and the youngest brother, Oren, who's also an All-American. And Phil played about 8 years in the NFL, although he had 3 major knee injuries that limited his productivity. And Oren played 2 years in the NFL. So at one time there were 3 Olson boys, and you can imagine growing up with 3 very healthy boys of that age and the rest of the crew, that cooking at our house was a challenge. My mom would cook stew in a 5-gallon broiler, and she managed to she would cook chicken, but she put 3 pans on the stove all at the same time, and she'd be cooking chicken in 3 pans. I think one of my favorite stories, Jack, though, is she was baking bread one day, and my brothers and I were standing there, and she pulled out the first tray of biscuits, and we polished that off. And the second tray came out, we polished that off. The third tray came out, we were busy on that one. She took off her apron. She said, "That's it. You can eat them faster than I can cook them. I'm not cooking any more biscuits."
In high school, Central Park High School, you were cut from both the football and basketball teams in the eighth and ninth grade.
Well, at Logan Junior High School, we had a system that took us through to the ninth grade at the junior high school, and I went out for every team that I could possibly go out for. I desperately wanted to be an athlete, and I dreamed about that. That was something I dreamed about. But I was horribly uncoordinated, and I could fall down on a flat sidewalk, and managed to do that once carrying about 9 milk bottles, which was a real mess. But at that age, I just simply was not an athlete. And even though I would go out and work myself to death and throw myself on the floor and chase the basketball and do whatever the coaches asked me to do, it was not illogical for them to say, "Gosh, you're not going to help us on this team, and you're going to be cut." And I was.
What do you say to a young person tonight who's not coordinated, who's ridiculed at school? He wants to achieve, she wants to achieve, but a lot of ridicule.
Well, I think that unfortunately is a reality for a lot of young people. And my advice is you have to really believe in yourself. And you can't allow the opinions of others to control your life. If you really want to do something, and if you really believe that it's important for you to do something, then you've got to stay after your dream. I don't know why it was that I was able to ignore all of the people who were telling me, "You're never going to be able to do this. Why don't you focus on something else and make some other decisions about where you're going to go with your life?" I simply wouldn't accept that, and it proved to be right for me. I don't know, Jack, that we can overcome every obstacle. I don't know that we could, for example, if I had decided that I was going to be a tap dancer, I might not have been able to do that. But gosh, being able to believe in myself and being willing to stay the course was something that was very important to me. Certainly at that age in my life, and of course it had major impact on my life throughout it.
We're talking to Merlin Olsen. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Merlin Olsen. Merlin, you win the Outland Trophy at Utah State. You get drafted in the first round by the Rams. Talk about your NFL career, please.
Kind of a shock for me to leave the small town of Logan and move to Los Angeles. And I don't know that I was ever really ready for the size of the stadium and the size of the city and the traffic and an eye-opener for me. But I was ready to play in the NFL. I was well-trained. I was capable as an athlete. I was confident in my own abilities. And I knew from the very first day I walked onto the field in Los Angeles that I was going to be able to play and start there. And it didn't take long. In fact, three games into the preseason, I was installed as a starting defensive tackle, and things gradually improved for us. I went to a team that was really a terrible team in L.A. We only won one game during that first season, and it was disappointing to me to be on a team that couldn't win. But I was excited by the fact that at the end of that first year, we already had in place the three of the eventual fearsome foursome. Lamar Lundy was there. He had started as a defensive end, or as a tight end, and moved over to defensive end. Deacon Jones was there. And at the end of that first year, Rosie Grier arrived from a trade with the Giants, and we knew right from the very beginning that we had something special in terms of our defensive line. We had a PR guy by the name of Jack Teal who also believed that that defensive line was pretty special, and he tagged us with the name the Fearsome Foursome. We had to live up to that name to make it mean something. But today, the Fearsome Foursome, I think, probably is still considered the finest defensive line in NFL history. And one of the things that was so exciting about playing with that group was not we were not only big, we were all over 6 foot five, 6'5" and a half, and Lamar was about 6'7". We were all big in terms of physical size, even though we were not weightlifters. We didn't have a single weightlifter in that group. But the smallest was Lundy. Lamar was 260, 265 pounds. Rosie was over 300, and I played in my early part of my career close to 300. Deacon was about 275. And we could all run. So we had that great physical talent, and then we had wonderful chemistry. There was this great competitive urge, and we urged each other on. Our philosophy was very simple. We wanted to keep quarterbacks awake at night. The night before the game, a lot of them did stay awake, worrying about what was going to happen the next day. And certainly, we accomplished a great deal as a defensive line, and egging each other on, encouraging each other, and we had a great personal relationship that that continues to this day. So for me, going to Los Angeles was the perfect choice at that point in my life, and you never know about those things until later on, but it proved to be exactly where I should go.
You got to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1982. Can you talk about that experience?
It's interesting, Jack. A lot of people grow up thinking about, a lot of young people who are playing football grow up thinking they want to play professional football. I didn't think about professional football when I was really young. I was just excited to be on my high school team and excited to be on my college team and finally realized that I was going to have a chance to play professional football. The same is true about the Hall of Fame. I think there are people who dream about being in the Hall of Fame. I didn't really dream about that. I was focused on playing the game as well as I could play it. And I felt that that whatever honors were deserved would come down the road. I didn't have to. That wasn't something that I had to spend time thinking about. If I did my job right, and if I played as well as I could, then I was confident that that the honors would come. Now, that may be a little naive, but that's the way I always felt about things. And I've also had this sense, and it may seem a little strange, that that when I was elected to the Hall of Fame, which came in my first year of eligibility, I might have been more appreciative of that honor had I had to wait for it a little bit longer. It came so quickly that that there was almost no opportunity for me to even think about it. And suddenly there I was standing in Canton, Ohio, looking at the busts of all the great players of NFL history and absolutely delighted and honored because it's as great an honor as can come to a professional athlete to be honored by his peers and to be ensconced in the Hall of Fame. And I was deeply honored by that. But I still have that little bit of unease about the sense that perhaps if I had waited a little longer, I would have had a greater appreciation for that moment in my life.
Following your football career, you then move up to the booth. And for 15 years, you're on the top broadcast team for both NBC and CBS. How did you ever learn to be an announcer?
Well, this may sound a little strange, Jack, but I'm not sure that that I found the things that I would have been best at in my life in pursuing broadcasting and football and acting. Maybe if I'd have been a musician, I'd have been a better musician than any of those things. Certainly, football was a little uncomfortable for me because I was never comfortable with the violence of the game. And very often I would find myself really at odds with some of the things I was expected to do as a football player. And the same is true in the broadcast booth, although I felt more comfortable in the broadcast booth than I did on the football field. But I had really prepared myself coming out of college. I graduated with a degree in finance and a master's degree in economics. I went back for the first couple of years after going to the Rams to finish my master's degree. And I had planned on a career in the corporate world. And even the first year that I was considering signing the Ram contract, I was also interviewing with and negotiating with IBM and Xerox. And the offers from those companies were within about $3,000 or $4,000 of what I ended up making with the Rams as a number one draft choice. So there wasn't a lot of money in the game of football in those days. I always kept my corporate options open. I worked for companies all during my football career. And as I got toward the end of my career, I'd almost felt that I would leave football and go into the corporate world. But I realized that I was going to be 15 years by that time behind my peers in terms of corporate experience, and I'd be catching up. And at that time, I also understood that there were going to be opportunities for me in the entertainment world, in the television world. And I decided that that was a better choice for me in terms of competitive balance, and so I began to pursue that, and I pursued it much the way I pursued football. I didn't expect my success as an athlete to make me a broadcaster. I knew that if I wanted to be a good broadcaster, I had to work as hard as I could and learn as much as I could about that craft. And I knew I had basic tools. I had a good voice. I had a mind that was able to see and compress things into a brief period of time, which is a real challenge in a broadcast booth. And so I felt that it was something I could do, although I didn't necessarily believe that it was going to be successful. And the other thing that was kind of crazy, at the same time, when I did negotiate the contract, I asked NBC, I told them I didn't want a part-time job. I said I'd like to have some chances, some opportunities to work as an actor, and I would also like to be able to work in news as well. Well, I think NBC, when they finally signed the contract, kind of ignored that side of it, but they did send out a letter that ended up giving me an opportunity to go to work on Little House on the Prairie, and I was actually working as a regular on Little House on the Prairie before I did my first football broadcast. Now, I didn't realize that I was getting myself into two full-time jobs, but basically throughout most of my broadcast career, I was working on television shows and working almost 7 days a week, week in and week out. And you want a real challenge, try preparing for your broadcast by dragging all of your work materials out on the set with you, and then reading scripts and memorizing lines on the airplane heading home so you can try and catch up. It was a hectic existence, but it was something that I was able to do effectively, and the challenge of it, although it was a monstrous challenge, was really exciting to me.
We're talking to Merlin Olsen. When we come back, we'll ask him about announcing 5 Super Bowls. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Merlin Olsen, who was named to the NFL's all-time team in 1999. Merlin, you announced Super Bowl 13, 15, 17, 20, 23. Can you talk about those experiences?
Well, that was exciting for me, Jack. I had never made it to a Super Bowl as a player, and although that was certainly our goal every year, and we got within a step of that opportunity on a number of occasions. So it probably had more meaning to me as a broadcaster than it may have done to others who had the opportunity to play in a Super Bowl. But I remember it was my second year as a broadcaster. I'd been working with Dick Enberg during that season. And Don Ohlmeyer had made a commitment to us that the best broadcast teams would be there doing the Super Bowl at the end of the year. And we were a young team, a very young team, but we had had a great year, and we had a chance. Enberg hosted the game, and I worked in the booth with Kurt Gowdy and John Brody, and it was a real challenge for me, being three in the booth for the first time, which I had never done except in one preseason game, and also having a chance to work a game that that is the number one television exposure of the year. I think it got easier after that first one, and I was certainly blessed with a number of opportunities to work in those Super Bowls. But it's a difficult job because you have such an intense group of press scrutiny. You know, you've got thousands of people there looking for every story and grilling you day in and day out. What are you going to talk about? What are you going to talk about? Well, by the time you get to the game, if you've shared all the information you have, what in the world are you going to say during the game? And, of course, if you make a mistake in that game, I mean, you're crucified. I mean, you got everybody is there, you know, going over every little thing that's done and said at that game, and you certainly don't want to look like you don't know what you're doing. So it is a challenge and a blessing and an opportunity, but it's also a little frightening at the same time. And I guess that's one of the reasons that I enjoyed it, because it was a high wire act, and I always liked that little bit of fear in the pit of my stomach. Are you up to this challenge? Is this something you can handle? Yeah, there is an incredible amount of that involved in the Super Bowl broadcast.
We're talking to Merlin Olsen, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with Merlin Olsen, who once was the Grand Marshal of the Rose Bowl and later that day broadcast the Rose Bowl game. Merlin, talk about your acting career.
That was kind of an interesting experience for me. Interesting and challenging and exciting all at the same time. When I was negotiating a contract with NBC, I asked them for an opportunity to do some acting, and I'd done some. I'd worked in a John Wayne film called The Undefeated, for example, which was really the first thing that I did, and I enjoyed that experience, and I felt like it was something that maybe I could do, and I wanted to do more of it, and I did work in a couple of other films before, while I was still playing football, before I left the game. But I had no idea what was coming when I had made that request of NBC. But they had sent a letter to all of the people producing shows for them, which basically said, Merlin Olsen has just signed a contract with us and is interested in doing some acting. One of those letters went to Michael Landon, who had just lost Victor French, who played Mr. Edwards on the show. And Michael had seen me do something, and I'm not sure what it was, but he said that it reminded him a little bit of his friend Dan Blocker, who played Haas Cartwright on Bonanza. And he invited me to come in and read for him, and I did that, and was absolutely shocked when because I thought I was reading for a part on a single episode. And he invited me to come and be a part of the show as a regular. Well, you could have knocked me over with a feather at that point. And the first scripts arrived, and they were scripts that had been written for Victor French, a professional actor of 20-some-odd years' experience and an absolutely brilliant actor. And all of a sudden, I'm reading this script and realizing that I have more lines in this first script than Michael Landon does. And I was petrified. And I called Michael Landon on the phone. I said, we need to talk. And I went in and I explained to him. I said, look, I'm not afraid to do this, but the one thing I don't want to do is make a fool out of myself, and I certainly don't want to cause problems for you. And I said, quite frankly, this script scares the hell out of me. And Michael looked at me and smiled, and he said, "Merlin, if I didn't think you could do it, I wouldn't let you do it." Well, that was all I needed. I said, "That's fine with me." And certainly, having survived that first script, I was able to continue on and have a wonderful experience with Michael, not only on Little House, but in the spinoff of Little House called Father Murphy, and which was a show that probably could have survived many more years if NBC had been in a little better shape at that time. But and then on to another number of other shows. But I really enjoyed, in particular, Jack, the opportunity to be on shows that that were family shows, that that I could sit down with my children and watch and feel proud of what I was doing and feel comfortable with what I was doing. And I think it's very sad in a way that we lost Michael Landon so early in his life, because if he were alive today, he'd still be doing those same kind of shows. And we desperately need those kind of inspirational, and his shows were inspirational. There were always messages in them. We need those kind of shows on television, as in contrast to some of the trash that is all too often presented there.
Since 1983, you've been the national spokesman for FTD Florist. Here you are, 6'5", 270, Hall of Fame football player, and you're selling us flowers. How did that ever come about?
Well, they were looking for, FTD was looking for a spokesman. And they had someone on the search committee that kept saying, "We ought to get an athlete." And they kept saying, "No, we don't want an athlete." Finally, he said, "Well, what about an athlete who is the Grand Marshal of the largest flower-related spectacle in the world, the Tournament of Roses?" And they perked up a little bit. And they said, "Well, maybe we could do a test on something like that." So I was given the opportunity to do a commercial, a test commercial for FTD. And you're right about the size, because the first thing I tested was a tiny bouquet called the Tickler. And in my hand, it looked almost microscopic. In fact, as we were shooting this, I noticed that the director is being pulled off to the side by a number of the FTD people, and there are all these conversations going on. I said, "I guess this is not working," and I was really concerned. And finally, the director came back, and he said, "Merlin, we have a problem." He said, "Your hands are so big that they make this bouquet look just tiny." And I smiled, and I said, "Look, I'm a fisherman. I can solve this problem for you. Let's take another run at it." So as they started this second run, I took the bouquet, pushed it out in front of me about a foot and a half toward the camera, and sure enough, that bouquet got a lot bigger in the camera, just as the fish do if you put them out in front of you. And it ended up being the beginning of a relationship that continues on today. I still, although I'm not doing the commercials for FTD today, I still work as their spokesman and do a lot of PR work for them. I think, Jack, that the contrast, the big football player and the gentle side of presenting flowers and the emotional side of flowers, which is such an important part of that business, the contrasts in that were what made this program work, and work it did. It was most successful and something that I still enjoy looking back on today.
We're talking to Merlin Olsen, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Merlin Olsen. Merlin, you grew up in a little town in Utah. Then you go to L.A. for 15 years. You're in Hollywood, five Super Bowls, all the hoopla, and you've maintained your humility, your gentleness, your easygoing life. How did you ever do that?
I think a lot of what we are is ingrained in us before we ever realize what we are. Much of it comes, at least the good in my life, is a credit to my parents. And the kind of home I was raised in, the kind of love that was showered on me early on, and the fact that my parents not only believed in me, but helped me to accept the challenges of life outside the home. And I think a lot of that is fortunate on my part. I look around at so many young people today who are raised in homes where they don't have that kind of love, they don't have that kind of net, and they don't have that kind of encouragement. And I worry that their potential may never be realized. But certainly for me, it gave me an opportunity to believe in myself, to not be afraid to accept the challenges that were out there. And certainly that's something that I have done throughout my life. I've walked in some intensely competitive arenas, and those arenas, basically the rule was, if you don't perform, you're gone. And I knew that, but I was willing to take that risk, and I was willing to be a part of it, and actually I liked the excitement of that.
Yours is a fairy tale life. Have you ever had any setbacks?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I don't think you don't go through life without setbacks, and certainly I've had my failures as well as my successes. In the early part of my RAM career, I decided that one of the things I needed to do was to build some diversity in my life in the off season, and I went out and I started a number of small businesses, and thinking that this would be a way to really kind of prepare myself for life after football. Well, the idea was pretty good. But I discovered very quickly that being in business for yourself can get very expensive, and it did. And several of those businesses were not only not successful, but ended up bringing me a great many financial responsibilities that I had to discharge and without the help of a lot of people who had become partners of mine. And it was a very frustrating and difficult period of my life. And I had to realize that in spite of the feeling that I could do anything, that there were things that I couldn't do, and that I better maintain and decide to focus my energies on areas that I could be comfortable in. That was one of the best lessons of my life. But at the same time, it was a bitter pill to swallow.
Your moniker, a gentle giant, really describes you. You're a very quiet leader. In your opinion, what makes a great leader?
Well, I've always believed that greatness is couched in part in having the courage to do what you know needs to be done. But it's also best described by the impact you have on those around you. Great leaders improve the performance of all of those people surrounding them. And I think they inspire the people who are being led. And it's not something that you can just decide you're going to do. Accepting a leader is something that is really outside of your hands. And there are a great many people who have decided they were going to be leaders who simply weren't accepted as leaders and couldn't keep the job. But I have enjoyed being given that responsibility at times, and I like the challenge of saying, okay, how do we best use our resources, and how do we best tackle the problems that face us? Those are questions that I enjoyed asking and helping to answer.
Life is a series of chapters, and you've had one Hall of Fame chapter after another after another. What advice do you give a listener tonight who's facing a new chapter in their life? How do they learn to let go and let God?
I think it's difficult to give advice to anyone. Free advice is maybe often worth as much as you pay for it. But certainly one of the things that I can tell people, and it's been true throughout my life, that perhaps one of the greatest strengths I had was that I really believed in myself. I believed that there were great things inside of me, and that I believed that if I were willing to work as hard as I could, and if I were willing to fix in my mind the goals that I wanted to achieve and decide early on what it was that I wanted to do with my life, that I could do that. And certainly it has served me well in the time that I've been on this earth, And I admire those. I have always admired those who have the courage to stand tall and be counted, and who have the courage to pursue their dreams.
You're a motivational speaker, and one of your speeches or topics is pushing yourself to new heights. If there's a listener tonight that has a dream but is afraid to go after it because of the fear of failing, what would you say to that listener?
You got to jump. It's like being trained as to go up and come out of an airplane in a parachute. I mean, you can do all the training you want, but you can't really do it unless you're willing to jump. And there is some fear in that always. I think the campaign that the Nike people have, the Just Do It campaign, I think is a wonderful one, because the challenge is there for us. I think if you have a dream and you have an idea about something, you've got to go for it. And nothing can happen until you really do cut it loose and say, all right, it's time to jump. It's time to make it happen. It's time to get it done.
You've said on a number of occasions that your most important responsibility is your role as Susan's husband and as father to your daughters and your son and as a grandfather. Through all of this hoopla and fairy tale life, you've maintained your family core. How have you done that?
Well, I've been blessed with a wonderful wife, Susan, who has stood by me through all of these crazy careers and twists and turns, and I have to give her an immense amount of credit for that. And during the difficult times, the hard-working times, she was there with the children. She was there to maintain our home life when I was basically gone a great deal of the time. But I do believe that the most important role I have is as father and grandfather and husband, and how meaningless all of these other things would be, Jack, if I didn't have a wonderful family to share them with. If I didn't have a partner to be able to come home and not only to share the good things with, but also to be there when things don't go well, to be able to put an arm around me and say, we're going to get through this, because there are always those days, just as there are the days to celebrate.
We've got 1 minute left. Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, I certainly would encourage them to do some thinking about what they want to do with their lives. I think focus is such a critical part of success. And taking the time to examine what you like to do, the things that bring you pleasure, the things that are exciting to you. It's difficult enough to succeed in this life without being encouraged to go into something by someone who's well-meaning, but who doesn't understand what you really want to do with your life. So choose something you want to do, and then attack it with all of the energy, all of the enthusiasm, and all of the capability that you can gather. And if you're willing to do that, then truly, I think that we are able to succeed more often than we fail.
Merlin, this has been a great hour. I thank you not just for what you've done, but more importantly, how you've always done it. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Jack.
Our guest next Sunday will be the founder of two orphanages in Mexico, Dr. John Shinsky. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.